Welcome to the FloridaProgressive.com podcast, episode 13 for August 2nd, 2014. I'm Mike Itzen. This show delivers news and updates via interviews with activists around the state on the issues that you, the people of Florida, care about. This episode is about working on campaigns, and particularly within the local Democratic Party structures. Patricia Metro Patrick and Mike Patrick are members of the Martin County Democratic Executive Committee, or DEC, and Patricia was elected vice chair of that body in late 2012. She is also chair of the election committee. They both became involved in politics, activism, and volunteering in 2008 with OFA, which was Obama for America at the time, now Organizing for Action. In addition to those actions, Mike and Patricia have participated in the Take Down Alan West campaign of 2012 and in Awake Martin County. They helped start Occupy Martin County, and currently they are working on several campaigns with their DEC. As a disclaimer, none of the opinions they hold in this interview are necessarily representative of any other organization. Their views are their own. Patricia and Mike, thanks so much for joining me on the show today.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
For those a little rusty in geography, Martin County, the fifth largest county in Florida by land area, on the east coast of Florida next to Palm Beach, Okeechobee counties, St. Lucie County. So what are some of the main issues facing Martin County right now?
Some of the main issues facing Martin County right now are the Indian River Lagoon. It's been a huge problem since early last century with the sugar growing in Florida. But as of lately, the past few decades, it has been especially worse with the runoff from the fertilizer in the sugarcane fields going into Lake Okeechobee, then during the rainy season, Lake Okeechobee having to basically be drained into our St. Lucie locks is causing the wildlife to die, high bacteria levels that you can't go swimming in lagoon, fish out of it, or anything. And so that's been the main issue in Martin County as of the past few years, is putting pressure on our local leaders and even our federal leaders to get this mess cleaned up and figure out a way to solve this problem, to get the runoff to be drained south through the Everglades instead of into our river. Another issue that is facing us is the All Aboard Florida. While we do need high-speed rail in the state of Florida, this is not the way to do it. This is a private enterprise that, despite what the governor and All Aboard Florida says, it is going to cost the Florida taxpayers money. And additionally, this is an unsafe way to do it as far as Martin County goes. These trains are going to be ripping through downtown Stewart, which is a historical district in our area, as well as other communities at very fast speeds with no safety measures, causing traffic delays and whatnot when these trains need to be further out west where they're not going to be going through communities.
For the first issue you mentioned, would you say that the one of the main problems with the way that the Indian River Lagoon is going right now is because of the sugar industry?
It is the primary issue. There is other pollution, for instance, from septic tanks and fertilizer in people's yards, my understanding. But the main source of pollution is coming from the sugar growing. Now, obviously, this is an important industry that Florida needs, and they do employ a lot of Floridians. So it is an important industry, but a lot of scientists and whatnot have figured out a way to kind of work something out for everyone involved to where the flow wave would go south, but the sugar industry strongly objects to it. And it's been a problem that has been facing Martin County and other communities in Florida for a long time, because up until recently, our politicians locally and federally were very much afraid to stand up against the sugar industry and talk about the solutions that can go on to solve this. So lately, we do have leaders that are fighting for the river, including a local candidate that we have running for state representative, Mary Higgins, as well as our current congressman, Congressman Patrick Murphy, has been quite the champion when it comes to securing funding and fighting for our river.
All right, so before we move on, I want to talk to you both about how local DECs work. But before we move on, are there any other issues you would like to mention, local or statewide, that you're concerned about that are facing the citizens of your county?
We in Martin County, we have the same concerns that a lot of other Floridians have in every other county, and that's Medicaid expansion, improving our schools. We're very concerned about this push towards charter schools that has been happening in the state of Florida, as well as, you know, civil rights issues. You know, we are very glad to finally see that the courts are ruling in favor of marriage equality here. And, you know, we also are looking to get some people in that are going to reverse some of the crazier laws that we have in the state of Florida, like Stand Your Ground and stuff along those lines. So basically, everything that most Floridians are concerned about, we are definitely very concerned about in Martin County.
Okay, so let's get into the nitty-gritty here of the DEC. Some people, a lot of people probably don't really know how they work. I have not really participated much in mine, so I'd like to hear from both of you. Two questions, really. How do they work? Like, who shows up? How does the process work? And then what kind of work are you guys doing? Is it exclusively about trying to get Democrats into office, or is it any kind of community work?
A Democratic Executive Committee serves one function, really, and that is to get Democrats elected. Now, that is made up, how you do that is by doing numerous different things. So first, I'll just start out with how you get on the DEC. You run what is called a precinct captain, and anybody in the community, as long as they are a registered Democrat, can run in that precinct to become the precinct captain. It's one man and one woman that gets elected. That way there is diversity and full representation of every sort of group. You elect one man and one woman. And then they are what is called a precinct captain, which then gets you onto the DEC. Your job as a precinct captain is to basically organize your precinct, make sure that the voters are registered, that you answer all their questions about any candidates or local issues, that you're doing whatever else is a big concern, like getting people out to vote by mail and this and that. Just basically making sure that as far as Democratic policies go and voting goes, everything is working smoothly in your precinct. Additionally, you on the DEC then work with other DEC members to do things like help out on campaigns, fundraise, make phone calls, basically do anything and everything that it really takes to get Democrats elected in your community. Now, another way to get on the DEC is when there is a vacant precinct and somebody comes into the DEC and is very involved and wants to help out more, they can get elected at large, which means that the voting body of the DEC, the whole DEC itself, votes to elect this person onto the DEC to do the good work that as a precinct captain at large. And that's actually how Mike was elected onto our DEC earlier this year.
Now, and be clear, if there are two people in places like Palm Beach County and larger counties, there are two people of the same gender who want to represent a precinct, they actually do go on the ballot for the public to vote. So it is an elected position. We just are fortunate enough in Martin County that most of the time it doesn't come to that, because as a small group that can get a little...
Fortunate. Definitely not fortunate. We need more people involved. But in Martin County, you know, unfortunately, since we are a small group, yeah, there's really no election for the DEC in Martin County.
And that's probably true for many counties across Florida. Right. You know, not too much involvement in voting, let alone in this level of commitment, you know. So.
And another way that we function to help get Democrats elected is we do fundraisers. We do events. We've got an event coming up next month that is a barbecue in the park. It's going to be just a big family event and just have people come out and see that, you know, Democrats are here, because historically Martin County is viewed as a red county by the state and by people locally. So we're really trying to change that around and let people know we are here and we are friendly and we support everybody, not just the wealthy and the people who live in the rich areas and things like that. We are for everyone in the county.
With the primary coming up August 26th, would you really kind of work on any Democratic campaigns, or is it more like wait till the primary's over and then support whoever wins that primary?
Some of the races there is not going to be a primary. There's only the one Democrat running. For instance, we have a woman running for state representative. Her name is Mary Higgins. We've all been very supportive and helping her out. She is the only candidate in that race, so we were able to quickly sort of endorse and get to work on that. We're also working for a city commissioner. It's a nonpartisan race, but we do have a Democrat in the city commission that is up for re-election, so we've been working very hard to get her re-elected. Obviously, our Congressman Patrick Murphy, he is not in a primary. But when it comes to the other races, such as attorney general and governor, we are remaining neutral, and none of us have been doing any work publicly for any of the candidates, and will continue to remain neutral through the primary. But once the primary is over, whomever for those different races gets the nomination, we will be coming out in full support and doing everything we can to get them elected.
Right. DC bylaws in general, I believe, I don't know for nationally, but I know for the state of Florida, as DEC member, you are not allowed to support one person or the other. There's even, you're not supposed to support anybody before the filing date has passed, because you don't want to discourage any Democrats from live locally from coming forward and running themselves. It's really hands off when you're on the DEC.
You do have to remain neutral and encouraging before the filing date. Make sure that you're remaining open, that anybody else can also come and say, I'm also going to run. Obviously, we all have our strong opinions about the different races, and we all know who we're going to be voting for in the primary. But as a DEC, we need to remain neutral and not endorse one person over another.
Like, you can't write any sort of opinion letters to the editor and signify that you are in any way representative of the DEC. You have to make it very clear that it's your personal vote or your personal opinion. For instance, I support Nan Rich, but I couldn't write on behalf of the DEC for Nan Rich, or I couldn't work on behalf of the DEC for Nan Rich, which, is...
Yeah, it's a good way to delineate between an official endorsement or not. Okay, I'm really intrigued looking at your biography about Take Down Alan West campaign 2012. That was successful. Alan West, I probably don't need to remind many people listening, was a fellow that had a reputation for extreme rhetoric and extreme actions in Congress. Tell me a little bit about working on that campaign and the victory there.
I started volunteering with the group in April of 2012, because as soon as I found out that that man wanted to pack up and move from Palm Beach County and move to Palm Beach County from Plantation, Florida, which was where he was living, and run to represent the newly formed District 18, I was absolutely appalled. I thought that his rhetoric and his attitude towards his colleagues and his constituents was not representative of the kind of community that we live in, and I certainly did not want that man representing me, especially when it came to his views on women's health issues and just women's issues in general. I was absolutely appalled and wanted to do everything I could to make sure that this man was not my next congressman. And so I started volunteering on that campaign. And then eventually, later on, I became an organizer with the campaign, because I just wanted to make sure that the community was educated, not just left-leaning Democrats in the area, but even Republicans. I managed to go out there and really get a lot of Republicans to see the light on Alan West, so to speak, and see that he wasn't going to represent them either. I don't know who really a person like that represents, somebody who has such hostile attitude towards everyone and everything.
The interesting thing about working with the Take Down Alan West campaign is, even though Credo, the progressive cell phone company and all that, they were running a super PAC, but they didn't spend a single dollar on advertising. It was all put right back into on-the-ground actions. We knocked on doors almost every single day. We phone banked for 8 hours a day, every single day, and just made sure that the residents of the district knew that Alan West was not right for them, because he's not right for anybody.
Okay. Patrick Murphy won that election, correct?
Yes, he did.
Okay. Let me push back against him slightly. because from what I read from progressive blogs, he is doing some negative things in terms of Wall Street over Main Street type issues. So what do you say to that kind of criticism of him? Is it more of like, well, at least we have somebody that's not Alan West? Or are you more pleased with Patrick Murphy when it comes to issues like you mentioned earlier with Big Sugar?
Overall, we're very pleased with Congressman Patrick Murphy. You know, a lot of people say, oh, you know, he won because he's not Alan West, and that doesn't get you anywhere in the long run. And I just want to say that he won on his own merits, while groups like what we were involved in and other groups came into the community and basically stressed the not Alan West thing. He stressed that he's Patrick Murphy and why you should vote for Patrick Murphy, not just as a not Alan West. So the man is doing a very great job in Congress. I do understand, yes, there are votes that I and many other people are not happy with. He has voted with Republicans on some things that he really should not have. But the fact of the matter is, even when he votes badly, he's voting with his constituents. It's a very tough district, Congressional District 18. And not only does it lean Republican, but particularly in Martin County, a lot of even the Democrats, they're far from progressive. I wish that they were more progressive. Sometimes I think it's up to members of Congress to kind of push the constituents further to the left on issues that they need to be. But unfortunately, Martin County is a very tough county, and some of his votes, even when he votes with Republicans, are in line with the Democrats in his district. Mm-hmm. And it's something that we need to work on over time and maybe educate the voters more. But overall, while he does have those votes that progressives are not happy with, he has stood up for so many issues, especially our lagoon. Like I said, the lagoon issue is an issue that no elected official has been really willing to take action on. And sadly, that's both parties. The sugar industry also gives to Democrats, and, you know, really great Democrats that fight so hard for the environment and our community overall, but they are so caving when it comes to issues concerning the sugar industry. And he has fought against it. He did not take any money from the sugar lobby in 2012 and continues to not. He also at first he supported All Aboard Florida, but then he said, you know what, I want to listen to what my constituents have to say. And the community came out and spoke to him and said, you know what, this is why these trains are not going to be good for the community. And so now he, because of his constituency's concerns, is against it. And so he really does speak for the community. And while, you know, some people are not always happy with his votes overall, I mean, he is doing a good job, and he has fought for things like reauthorizing the Violence Against Women Act. He also has been doing numerous wonderful things when it comes to providing more funding and better services for the VA. And so I never want to say that bad votes are excusable, but we can't let that overshadow the good work that he has done. And the sad thing is, if he had run more progressively in 2012, Alan West would be our congressman.
Right. I think every activist really needs to do that arithmetic. Like, you consider the political dynamic of the local area. I mean, if you always wish for a utopia, we're going to lose more. However, if there is an opportunity for good progressive change, you push more, hopefully get a better candidate into office. And that really segues to something that Mike and I were talking about before we started the show. Mike, you wanted to speak about some issues when it came to, you know, you take a regular issue. I don't know if you want to go into specifics or speak in general terms, but you take an issue, and then all of a sudden you have a bunch of different activists, and they want to kind of blow off the entire electoral system. Do you want to speak to that at all?
Yeah, it goes back to Patrick Murphy a little bit. He held a hearing in Washington, D.C., where he invited a bunch of people from the district to come up and speak to members of Congress. Any member of Congress who was willing to show up was welcome to come and hear what our problems with the Indian River Lagoon. You know, he's gotten money approved for the Indian River Lagoon. He speaks about it on the floor of Congress. And, you know, being that he is our federal level representative, he can't do a whole lot for it. But you have these river activists who they want to beat up on him because they say he's not doing enough or he's doing nothing. It really speaks to a lack of paying attention to what is actually happening in the political world, because if you do, then you can't continue to just exist in a state of perpetual outrage. They care about the river, but I don't think that they care as much about talking about actual solutions as much as they care about pointing the finger and saying, this politician is not doing the right thing, that politician is not doing the right thing. And some of them are disenfranchised, and some of them are used to our politicians that we've had locally for so long that refuse to do anything about it, which is understandable. But our DEC has put out a public statement that we will not support any candidate that accepts money from the sugar industry. And we invited the Martin County Republican Party to make the same statement, because this was a across-the-board issue that affects the entire community, affects the well-being of our fishing industry in Martin County. We have tourism that depends on people wanting to come and see the river and the ocean, stuff like that. And when it looks like nasty green-black coffee, basically, and you can't swim in it because you'll get weird infections and lesions on your body, you would think that the Republican Party would say, yeah, that sounds good too, but no, they wouldn't join on to our resolution because all of their politicians take sugar money, period. Don't even have someone who has the political courage to stand up and say, I'm not going to do that because it's affecting the people in my area negatively. So they wouldn't even join us on making this resolution. And so you have river activists, you know, I say to them, look at the two parties. You have the Democratic Party who is standing up for the environment, standing up for what you believe in, standing up for what's right for you, and the Republican Party who refuses to, and even will say, well, agriculture is very important business and very important to our area. We can't possibly do anything about it because they don't want to dare offend the FanJul brothers. So I ask these people, well, we are fighting for your side. Why won't you in turn fight for us? So there's a river rally coming up August 3rd. It's the anniversary of the one we had last year on August 3rd to protest the discharges that had ruined the entire summer tourism industry and things in Martin County and northern Palm Beach County. And it's not an exaggeration when I say you could not go in the water. There were people going in and getting infections, and then all the news would say was there's something wrong with the water. We don't know what it is, and we don't know who's to blame. We luckily had Eve Samples at Stewart News, who just pursued it endlessly. So the second annual protest is coming up, and they've said no politicians are allowed to speak. Politicians can come if they want to and listen to us. And I say, politicians are the ones who are going to be able to get regulations passed to stop this kind of thing from happening. Politicians are going to be the ones to put pressure on the Army Corps of Engineers. We've already tried citizen pressure. We've already tried activist pressure. They don't care. The Army Corps of Engineers, they don't care about what we have to say. The FanJul brothers, they don't care about what we have to say. They need regulation in place. They need laws in place. We need money approved for it. Money just doesn't appear out of thin air. You need politicians to get that money. So for people to say that politicians can't do anything, or politicians don't do anything, or they can't help us, you're not electing the right politicians then.
And I'd like to add to that is, you know, some of the river activists have been talking about, you know, we need action, not words. And for the most part, I really do agree with that. But here's the thing. We have people running for different offices in the state of Florida that have ideas on how to fix the lagoon. They're not elected yet, so they haven't been able to take action. So they need to tell people what they're going to do. So they need for it. So those people, all they have are words. They're not action yet. And if you don't let them get the chance to explain it, then I really feel like that's troublesome, because if you care about the river, you need to be listening to the people that are running that also care. You need to know who you should vote for, who should get your vote that's going to actually help the river. And if you don't give these people the chance to speak, then you're never going to know that. And it's not just the river. With so many issues in the community, I've had to tell people, yes, we the activists are very important. We are the ones that essentially do make the changes, but the changes we want, those laws need to be passed by our lawmakers. They need to be written by our lawmakers. So we do have to have that dialogue and put the pressure on the politicians, because we can only go so far. They have to actually do it. But you have people that, again, and there seems to be this sort of like internal war with some of the activists, because we had a bunch of activists that went to Tallahassee and spoke to our Florida state lawmakers and put pressure on them. And then you have the ones that went to D.C. that Patrick Murphy got to speak to other members of Congress and whatnot. And some of them are kind of looked at like as part of the problem, which I really just don't get that.
I want to say one more thing, that they expect some sort of huge turnout on August 3rd. The organizers are, in their estimate, that it's going to be thousands and thousands of people. I think if you really are concerned with the health of the river and you really want to see if change happen and things actually happen, then you should say, well, we have a candidate who is running to replace an ineffectual member of the state house. Marilyn Magar is currently representing part of Martin County, and she's not horrible, 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 but she basically does nothing. She doesn't come out to anything. She doesn't seem to care about much of anything. She doesn't care about her constituents, it seems. And you have a woman running who has been on the campaign trail for a year and a half, talking to everybody at every river event and everything like that. And if you don't say, hey, let's get her in front of these 5,000 people and tell them why they should vote for her, because it's a perfect platform for us to actually get an ally in the state legislature. If you don't think that's a good idea, then what are you even really fighting for?
Mm-hmm. Mike, earlier you mentioned two brothers. Who were they?
The Fanjul brothers.
I haven't heard of them.
Is it Fanjul or Fonjul, Trish?
It's pronounced Fonjul.
Who are they?
The Fonjul brothers are Cuban refugees who came to this country, fled Cuba, I believe when Castro came into power, and
yes.
The one joined the Democratic Party, one joined the Republican Party. They built up the sugar industry in the United States and work with elected officials to keep embargoes on Cuba to keep Cuban sugar from coming into the United States. And have long since had their fingers deep into the American politics. They had a personal relationship with Bill Clinton. Marco Rubio thanks them personally in his biography. They gave as much money, or their companies gave as much money to Bill Nelson in 2012 as they gave to Obama. So they, you know, and also gave equal amounts to Mitt Romney. They spread their money everywhere, and they make sure that everybody, you know, even Bernie Sanders takes money from them because he doesn't understand or he just likes money. We don't know why, but everybody seems to be on the take. So for us, we are one of two counties in the entire state who was willing to stand up and say we will not endorse anyone who takes money from the sugar industry. And the other county is our neighbor directly to the west, or all the way on the west coast, I should say, who has the same problems with their river from discharges coming out of Lake Okeechobee, the same exact problem.
So Okeechobee County?
What is it?
No, to the west coast of Florida. I do have to apologize. I forget the county's name, but it's where the Caloosahatchee River goes into. They're also seeing the discharges going in.
I'll put that information at the end of the show.
Mm-hmm.
For the final question, I just wanted both of you to think about the news lately. Kind of put your pundit hat on more than your activist hat, you may or may not be doing activist work related to these issues or not. But, you know, just as an observer of the news, I was thinking the other day, this is probably one of the worst summers I've ever seen in terms of news, whether it's Hobby Lobby or, you know, foreign policy or other environmental issues. This question is basically a grab bag. Go ahead and if you would like, go ahead and rant. Let me know what you guys are thinking about lately.
I do agree. It's been especially rough of a summer between the Hobby Lobby decision, our attorney general here in Florida trying to fight the courts on their decision about marriage equality, to the conflict with Israel and Palestine, Russia and Ukraine, the airplanes going down. It's just been, I can't even wrap my head around it all sometimes. But one issue that has been especially troubling for me is the issue with the children at the border. It's beyond heartbreaking to think that we have thousands upon thousands of kids that are being, you know, basically detained almost like criminals at the border because their parents are sending them over the border, or in many cases, and I feel not enough people are willing to talk about this, they're being trafficked. The issue of human trafficking is something that has concerned me, and I've been working with different leaders and whatnot, you know, contacting them to reach out to find solutions for this. And I am glad when I see some people talk about, you know, immigration in regards to human trafficking, because the sad thing is, while, you know, a lot of these kids are sent over to live with family, some of them are being sent over to work illegally, you know, on farms or sex trafficking. And it's just,
a wide range of nightmare going on at the border, and I feel like no one is really willing to kind of come up with a decent solution. I personally disagree with the president that they just need to be sent back, because I feel like they're being sent back to a nightmare, you know, in their country of Honduras.
And I feel like it didn't always used to be that way for the United States. I feel, you know, that level of compassion you were just speaking of seems to not exist as much anymore. You know, I mean, these children want asylum from dangerous situations, like you're just saying.
A lot of times they're getting sent across without, they don't know what's going on. Their parent says, walk that way. And the next thing they know, they're across the border and sitting in a room. You know, they don't know any better. So what are we sending them back to? Because we don't even know what is there for them to go back to. So rather than just sort of shuffling off and saying, not our problem, like whatever happened to, I don't remember the saying, give us your sick. What is it? The Ellis Island saying. Yeah, I love that whole thing. But but yeah, we
you're tired.
We have,
you're sick. You're huddled masses. All this.
There you
yeah.
go. Was that only for white people? I mean, come on. Like all these people. That really bothers me a lot with the Tea Party and a lot of these other fringe elements that I see on the right. That there's just this undercurrent of racism in the way that we handle immigration in this country. There's a definite undercurrent of, we only want your immigrants if they're from Western Europe.
Mm-hmm. You know, and I don't know where this nonsense got started that people come over here illegally and don't want to work and take our taxpayer money and all this stuff. I mean, I know for a fact, you know, if you're in need and you need any sort of social service or anything, you have to prove that you're an American citizen. In no way are we just giving things to people that are coming over here. You know, these people come over here and they're willing to work and do things the right way. And I think overall, you know, we need a reform. I've known people that came over here on work visas, and those work or student visas, and it expired and this and that, and they're willing to, you know, be great productive members of the American society, but the immigration process takes forever.
Right. Yeah, I'm not going to name any names, but we knew a guy who was on a student visa. He would have loved to become an American citizen, but the immigration process was so long and arduous that he ended up contributing nothing. He ended up hiding in his apartment for the next several years until he could move back to where he came from, until he could, you know, his family could get the money to put him on a plane, because once he was gone, he wasn't going to be allowed back without some other kind of a visa. What kind of a solution is that? You know, we need, if people want to live here and want to work here, want to contribute to the tax base, which I know is a big no-no in politics. We're not supposed to talk about how important taxes actually are. Mm-hmm. You know, you have, I see on my Facebook, I see people saying that they, I tried to go to the Social Security office today and it's only open till noon. It's like, where do you think the money to keep that open 9 to 5 comes from? I don't know if people think that they are just slashing budgets for fun, or if it's because they don't have the tax money, the tax revenue to support this stuff, but it's political suicide for a candidate to talk that way.
Well, I feel like, you know, if you can argue with a conservative in good faith, conservatives and liberals can both agree that we want our tax money well spent, which is why liberals tend to be like, yeah, let's raise the taxes a bit more, which is, you know, that kind of third rail in politics you're just talking about. Okay, well, I don't want to rant here, but I just started ranting. Any other issues that you two want to talk about before we close the show?
Well, let's see. Trish mentioned All Aboard Florida a little bit, but
oh yeah,
we went to a rally about it that was Florida Not All Aboard, and something that we have seen is the main organization against it is backed by our local Tea Party, which is troubling because it is an issue that affects everybody in the area. And people are going the way of this organization, which, if you look at their postings and things, seemed, you know, even though I've asked, I said, are you against high-speed rail in general? They've said no. But if you look at their postings, it's very clear that they are against high-speed rail in general. But that's a completely different thing. The thing that I wanted to say was that someone mentioned at the rally, one of the speakers mentioned something that I found very interesting, because everyone wants to talk about how this All Aboard Florida, you know, why are they doing it? Passenger rail doesn't turn a profit. It's doomed to fail. No one even wants passenger rail, blah, 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 all this stuff, all this talk about how bad of an idea it is for that angle. And someone said one of the terminus points in South Florida is a new port that they're building. So I think All Aboard Florida is a way to get some pretty good upgrades to the rail line, and under the guise of, oh, we're going to do passenger trains, and then once that inevitably fails, the actual increased, you know, doubled, tripled, whatever freight traffic that will be on that rail is what is the actual end goal. But now that I've seen all these plans for these huge stations they're putting in Palm Beach and Broward County, I do have to wonder, but I don't know. It just seems like if they know that it's not going to turn a good, tidy profit, why do it?
Just to be clear, both of you are in favor or opposed to this rail?
Opposed to this.
Okay.
I'm opposed to it because if you go to, even here in Martin County or northern Palm Beach County, even some places in Fort Lauderdale, the places where the rail intersects are main drags from 95 to US 1, or in Stewart, in the middle of downtown, there's a place we call named at Confusion Corner, and five roads converge on this one intersection. You know, you can go to any of the five roads from any of the other four, and the tracks run directly through the center of Confusion Corner. And anybody who says that is not going to cause safety concerns, that's not going to cause traffic concerns, that's not going to cause all manner of headaches is diluted. And that's why it's so unpopular in Martin County, because you just have to take a look around, you know, downtown Stewart, and you see how big of a problem it will be.
You know, and the bottom line is there's a lot of weird issues with this. You know, documents have uncovered some shady investments, including a Chinese casino firm. Rick Scott is actually in some hot water over this because his chief of staff has ties to one of the companies that is involved with All Aboard Florida. And a lot of us, you know, we're really raising the question, you know, how come a couple of years back we could have had a federally funded rail service that would have created jobs and enabled, you know, high-speed travel to work at multiple parts of the state, you know, with no cost to the Florida taxpayers. Yet our governor rejects that, but, you know, is more than willing to basically support this idea of a privately owned rail service that is not going to create jobs. They say it's for tourism, but I really don't see that many people traveling. I think it's 16 times a day from Miami to Orlando. I don't see that happening, especially as they're floating around the cost. It's going to be a lot cheaper to drive your family. They want to say that it's going to take about 3 hours from Miami to Orlando. That's not fast. That's not much faster than your car. So there's a lot of stuff going on with this rail project that it doesn't seem to be what they're saying it is. And so the community is asking, why are they doing this? Because nothing makes sense. It's not fast. It's expensive per ticket. And it's just not being what they're saying it's going to be, as well as being pretty dangerous for our community as far as where the rail lines are.
It's almost as if they are more concerned with getting it built and not really putting any thought into it, so that they're, I'm going to be, you know, really cynical here, so that their business partners can have a boondoggle on the American tax.
It is, and if you look at these stations, they're beautiful, the plants that they have, and I believe they also want to put, you know, sort of like entertainment and restaurants in these stations and stuff, so they would be sort of these like shopping and entertainment hubs with these trains that are going where exactly, like, what are you doing on these trains, you know, 16 round trips a day? That seems completely excessive. Mm-hmm. You know, and I do want to add, and this is something that we've had to explain as the Martin County Democratic Executive Committee, because we did take a stance against this, is we support rail. We understand that we need high-speed rail in this state to benefit tourism and the economy and jobs, but this is not the way to do it. We want to see a proper high-speed rail that is affordable, actually goes fast, that is going to take you to jobs and different things like that, not this.
Well, I mean, the biggest benefit of this one over the high-speed rail a few years ago is that Rick Scott's buddies can make some coin off of it, which is, as we all know, what's most important. Mm-hmm. Is enriching the friends of, you know, Republican politicians. apparently, considering how we do business in this state.
It's a conflicting thing for us. I mean, I think both proposals had their boondoggles attached, but as liberals, we want, you know, we are in favor of this type of transportation. It's better for the environment and things like that, the last time I checked, at least. So.
And we are the, you know, just like a lot of things that end up political and really shouldn't be, we are one of the few civilized countries that still thinks that high-speed rail is some sort of thing worth debating and isn't just an obvious idea that we should definitely do. Especially considering we're one of the largest countries in the world geographically, and yet England can manage to just say, yeah, let's put it in. Let's get some 200-mile-an-hour trains. That sounds fine. And yet we could definitely benefit high-speed rail crisscrossing this entire country, and yet nope. Mm-hmm. Because people want to make it a political thing, because how dare a Democratic president suggest such an absurd idea?
Right. I think I'm trying to remember here, but I believe that Obama had some stimulus funds as part of the package for the last time. So.
Yeah, that's what it was. Several billion dollars per state.
Yeah, I believe it was $2.4 billion the state of Florida was getting from the stimulus package to fund high-speed rail. So this
that's
is basically
gone.
Yeah, it's gone. Rick Scott gave it away, rejected it, and it went to other states. I believe California, I think, is getting a rail service
yeah,
now,
Nan,
thanks
Nan
to
Rich
us.
Likes, Nan Rich likes to tell a story that a woman, she went to a conference, and a woman from California came up and thanked her, and she said, what? And the lady said, because your governor rejected high-speed rail, that allowed us to double the funding to our high-speed rail. Mm-hmm. So the money didn't go back into the taxpayer pocket or whatever sort of nonsense the Republican Party or anybody likes to try to think. The high-speed rail rejection is the same as the Medicaid expansion rejection, in that Rick Scott rejected the money for both things, denying services to Floridians and under the assumption or under the guise of saving the taxpayers' money. When that money, it didn't go into taxpayer pockets anywhere. It went to other places. It got redistributed to other states in both cases. So this sort of narrative that they like to push that they're saving money is just moving the money to somewhere else, to other states who will gladly accept it.
That's a great
and
point.
So we just lose out on services for no reason at all.
Okay. Well, Patricia, Mike, thanks so much for joining me today. Thanks for all the work you do on behalf of Florida.
Thank you for having us.
All right. Tomorrow on August 3rd at the Phipps Park Campground in Stuart, Florida, is a huge rally in support of cleaning up the Indian River Lagoon. If you live in the area, go out and show your support. The other county with the DEC that will not endorse anyone who takes money from the sugar industry is Lee County. Together with Martin County, they are the only two DECs to have done so in Florida. For more info on the topics discussed in the show, check the links throughout the transcript of this podcast at floridaprogressive.com. Patricia Metro Patrick and Mike Patrick can be found on Facebook. You can find me on Facebook at the floridaprogressive.com podcast. You can find me on Twitter at Mike Gidson, spelled E-I-D-S-O-N. This is the fourth podcast out of 5 in 5 days. If you want to promote the podcast on social media, you can use the hashtag 5interviews5days. This music is by Kevin McLeod at Incompetech.com. It is licensed under Creative Commons by Attribution 3.0. Thanks for listening.